From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 800-462-7413. And, of course, along with your calls, some interesting topics, Zorba.
Yeah, we're going to talk about patients actually recording their visit in the doctor's office. What are the legal ramifications of that? What does that mean? Is it new? Is it old? What's going to happen to it? And we're going to talk about one of my favorite topics, coffee, and some new important data that shows that you should drink coffee because you'll live longer. So Puritans, beware. This is not a topic that you want to listen to.
Interesting stuff. What's our recipe?
Tom's Asparagus. Nice, delicious, wonderful listener-sponsored
recipe. We'll be on the phone with Tom. That's coming up. 800-462-7413 is our number. And Zorba, we welcome a listener now in Greenwich, Connecticut. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help?
So here's my situation. I have four children. We are a very athletic family, really, really into sports. That was kind of the heart of our family. My kids are age 9 to 16. Mm-hmm. My two boys are shut down from sports now. One was diagnosed at the age of 14 last year with pars fractures from stress, from too much sports. And my 9-year-old was just diagnosed 2 weeks ago with spondylolisthesis and grade 1 slippage, reaction from too much sports. Mm-hmm. We did everything, tackle football, flag football, hockey, basketball, lacrosse, everything. And now it's kind of water over the dam, as they say. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if you're aware of any information or websites or anything or guidelines so that families don't overdo it for their children. In other words, should you base it on how many hours a day should your child, say, between the ages of 8 and 12, do sports, or is it the number of sports he should be doing? I'm heartbroken at how my son's bodies are worn out at such a young age, and I wonder if there's any tips on guidelines and how we should handle children's sports.
First of all, let's talk about both of those things. So
yeah,
one's got a spondylolisthesis, and part of that is a genetic issue. So let's put that, and that's your 9-year-old.
Right.
And then the pars fracture is kind of like a stress fracture, you could say. I want to go back. I do want to answer your question, but the first thing I want to say is their bodies are not worn out. That's the if you take that as the take-home message today. Tom and I have done a great job because one is 14, one is 9. And let me tell you, kids have regenerative powers that adults don't have. I wish I had the regenerative power of a 9-year-old or a 14-year-old because then I wouldn't have any arthritis. My joint over here would feel better. My back would feel better because they will regenerate. So that's an issue. You know, the pars fracture is a stress fracture. And sometimes it's from, as you say, doing too much can do it. Like you said, you were into sports. So what are the guidelines? These are great big issues. They're especially issues for girls who play things like frisbee and soccer. They're using their bodies and they often get stress fractures. They have trouble with their knees. One of our best friend's child, Anne, has knee problems now, doesn't ski as much down the hill because she has pain because she was an avid ultimate frisbee player and just played too much. So there's no absolute guideline. And the question is, when do you stop? And that's not always easy. So you guys played all different sports with your kids. You got obviously you and your husband are very much into sports.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. What are they doing now? What are your kids doing at
this point? Well, the 9-year-old shut down completely. It depends on, you know, of course, we're seeing, you know, the best experts in the world for him.
What have they said for him? That's the
varies.
One with the spondy.
One said, do physical therapy. Mm-hmm. Another said, are you crazy? Mm-hmm. Let him rest. Don't do any PT.
This is a recent diagnosis.
Yes.
So let me talk about that. I think whenever you have an acute fracture in the body, the important thing the body needs to do is rest for 6 to 12 weeks. That's it. So in other words, what does rest mean? Rest means putting whatever the joint is or the bone is at rest. So I'll give you an example. I have an old body. I don't have a 9-year-old body. I've got an old body. Fractured my ankle in California on a hill. And the doctor said, don't let your foot touch the ground for 6 weeks. And I didn't let my foot touch the ground for 6 weeks. And then I was on crutches for another 2 weeks. I have no pain. I have no discomfort. I ski, I hike, I do everything I wanted to because I gave it a chance to heal. So for the 9-year-old, I wouldn't do much for 6 to 8 weeks. And older bodies need to do physical therapy right away to catch up. 9-year-olds don't.
Okay.
Their body regenerates quickly. So I would go on the side of give it some rest, look at the x-rays, you follow it with the x-rays, give it 6 to 8 weeks. The hard thing is keeping him down. There are things that he can do like swimming. I mean, swimming is a non-weight-bearing sport, and that should be okay if he wants to do something. If not, you have him hang out. Believe me, he's going to go back to sports afterwards. That's where you need guidance. Now, what about the 14-year-old with the pars fracture?
Well, he's up at a camp right now trying to hike, and mm-hmm. we've just told him don't have any weights. Mm-hmm. It's hard because they're very active, curious.
Sure. Sure.
Strong boys,
sure.
And they look perfect if you look
yes.
at their little bodies.
Yes, well, they look perfect.
Big guys, not so little, but
that's right.
They look perfect.
Right.
And so to say, and now my little guy's even scared of swimming because the doctor said, you know, pain is bad. If you have a day with pain, then that means you have to stop your activity.
Uh-huh.
And he was crying yesterday. I said, why didn't you tell me you had pain today, honey? And he said, because it was just a teeny bit, and I'm scared, Mommy. I'm scared you're going to take away swimming, and that's the only thing I can do.
Well, you know, that's the other point. It's that communication with him, and he's got a 9-year-old brain.
Yeah.
And he knows if he says something, Mom's going to all of a sudden say, oh, this is going to happen. You tell him, look, then instead of swimming for this amount of time, we're going to swim for less amount of time, and we're not going to take away swimming completely.
Right.
Because this is what I call one of those golden learning opportunities of you and your child together. There's no absolute number of what you did. Your kids had, they're just like athletic injuries if they were on a soccer team and they fractured an ankle hitting the goalpost. They are going to heal. You are great in getting them into sports, but you may want to pull back, like you say, a little bit. And
oh,
that
yeah.
means
and
that means a little bit less. But they're going to heal. I don't think you should have any fear that they have ruined their bodies. They have not ruined their bodies at all. Once again, rest is important whenever you have an acute injury for 6 to 8 weeks. And that's always what you want to look at.
Then, I wish to God you were closer so that you could meet him, because the doctors that we see, you wouldn't even... Even the pediatrician, as well as the experts, they all say, whoa, this is something you only see in really, really old people. This only happens to people who are really, really old. And the poor kid, you know, the next night, he said, Mommy, I looked in the mirror in my bedroom and I saw the face of an old man.
Oh, gosh.
Back at me.
Oh, that's
awful. And I just
want to,
you know, I just want to, like, shake them or something and say, are you crazy? This is a little kid. Don't tell him that.
What a terrible interaction
that
those physicians, that physician had with the patient. What a dumb thing to say.
Yeah,
that's what I could say.
To you is like the first good news we've heard.
You're doing a good job, and there's a time for the body to rest, and then you pick off, and then you cut back some amount, maybe 25%, I don't know. You'll figure it out. And the relationship, once again, of you and the child are key, so that your child's going to say when they hurt and they don't hurt, because they know you're not going to take away everything. Keep up the good work.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very, very much.
Sure.
You are most
appreciate
welcome.
The call. Thank you. Before our next call, Zorba, this is real. Patients are recording doctor visits.
Well, it's very interesting. This is an article that showed that this happens. I've never seen it happen in my office that I know of, that doctor visits are recorded. And it's an interesting situation. It's complex. First of all, states have different rules on whether or not you can be recorded. So I'm not sure what the rules are in our state. I certainly would like to know if I'm being recorded. I think I should have to give permission. On the other hand, they're recording it with their ears. I'm saying stuff.
Yeah.
So why shouldn't they be able to record it with their phone? I think it would be polite for them to let me know. And in some states...
Isn't it a legal thing?
Well, it's different in different states. That's what it turns out. There are states called all-party states where everyone has to say, yes, I'm recording you, and yes, I agree
to record it. No, I mean the purpose of the recording is so you can sue the
no,
doctor?
No, I don't think that's the purpose. The purpose is so that people remember what's going on and share the information.
Oh, I see.
Why would you automatically go to the dark side that people are recording it so they can sue doctors. I mean, no, not at all. Yeah, I want to record this so that if you do something wrong, I can bring it to a lawyer and sue you and make. That's not the reason.
I'm saying my memory's pretty good. I don't think I need a tape recording.
Well, there are a number of things. First of all, we don't use tape anymore, Tom. We don't use tape. Nothing moves. It's on our phone. We push a button and it records in a memo or a text. Over and done, no problem. There's an app for that. But it's so people remember things. And frankly, we hand sheets of paper telling people what to do. But there's some part that's logical where I might say, when I looked at this study, I might say, look, why don't you turn on your tape recorder, which is not tape recorder, to record it on the phone, and I'll tell you what I want you to do, and then people can play it back. And some people are auditory learners, some people are visual learners, mm-hmm. and also you can then bring it back to your caregiver or your partner, in your case it would be Monica, and say, look what the doctor said, and A, prove you went to the doctor as a guy, and B, prove you interacted with the doctor, and C, then they help you so you do the stuff that's right. So I think there's a logic to it, especially during let's discuss what's going on. As for recording the whole visit, I think it'd be kind of boring. But anyway, that's what's moving on. I think this is going to be something in the future with patient instructions. So I like this idea, but I want to know if I'm being recorded. And I'm sure the organization which is SSM Dean Clinic, would also have certain rules because you always have rules when you have recordings.
Yeah. Yeah. 800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener with us in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
I'm calling about my daughter. 30 years ago, she was born with club feet affecting both feet. We tried manipulation and casting for a year. And then the doctor said, this isn't working. We're going to do the surgery. And she had surgical repair of both feet. And everything went well. She did not do physical therapy or anything like that. When she was in high school, she started to complain of some pretty intense pain. I took her back to the orthopedist, and he said, you know what? She's going to have pain. It just depends on how much pain she wants to deal with. She continued to play basketball throughout high school, and it was tolerable. Recently, though, it's become intolerable. Huh. The pain's pretty intense and sometimes debilitating. She has trouble walking, especially she's a teacher, especially if she's been on her feet all day, maybe covering a class or two, so she's not had any downtime. And she's pretty much done for a day or two after something like that. She has researched it. I've researched it. We've gotten all kinds of suggestions, but it's pretty scary. I mean, the end result is that most people say this pain continues and sometimes gets worse as the person gets older. And
so her biggest problem sounds like it's when she's standing in the classroom for a long period of time?
If she's moving. If she doesn't, if she's mm-hmm. not able to...
Moving.
Yeah, right. And her feet swell up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Has she
gone to a podiatrist?
She has. Mm-hmm. And the podiatrist, he told her it appears she fell on some stairs about 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
Okay.
And he told her it appeared that she had torn some sutures or something that was part of that surgery.
Mm-hmm.
He did not. He said, I don't think a surgical repair is going to do anything. I don't think that's the solution.
Okay, so let me go to the next step for a second. First of all, I think surgery is what you want to do last. It's not what you want to do first. She's gone to a physical therapist for exercises or not?
No.
Okay. A recent study showed that when you have a knee meniscus injury, I want to go to that for a second. It's nothing to do with your daughter with club feet and surgery. But a knee meniscus injury with pain, that 80% of the time people will cure the pain by doing appropriate physical exercise for 12 to 14 weeks every single day. In other words, the right exercises. For years, if you had a meniscus injury and an MRI and you were 50 years of age, you went to an orthopedic surgeon and you had, quote, the meniscus repaired. We'll tuck it. We'll nip it up, tuck it out, and take out the stuff you don't need. The new studies have shown that's the wrong approach. You do that with people who don't get better with exercise. In other words, for the 20% where exercise doesn't work. It is, by the way, the number one surgery that orthopedic surgeons do. And so because it's common because we have MRIs and we can see it. I think the same thing applies to every single joint in a pain that we have in our body. And I think that's what this study shows, that appropriate exercise can make a difference. The foot has lots of bones in it. You know, you look at it on an x-ray, it's just like the wrist. It has a whole bunch of bones in there. It has lots of ligaments. And they were basically changed and disturbed because she had a club feet when she was born. You know, and then she had surgical repair, and then she fell on it, which is not unusual. She needs to get the correct exercise from a physical therapist. She needs to do it a minimum of once a day and maybe twice a day for 12 to 14 weeks and see what that does. This is an exercise probably with at least 80% probability, maybe higher, will improve her pain situation. And that's what she needs. An orthopedic surgeon or more a podiatrist has to, of course, give the appropriate shoe inserts. But like you said, wow, she needs the right exercise. These are lots of joints, and exercise improves the mobility of those joints. So if you don't have a physical therapist who knows about foot exercises, that's what you have to find out. And you're in Oklahoma City. You've got a great institution there. You've got the University of Oklahoma. There's a physical therapist there who knows how to give the appropriate exercises for your daughter. And she needs to do 10 minutes twice a day or 15 minutes twice a day of the exercise. And then you call us back and let us know 3 months later after she's done it twice a day.
Okay, I will do that.
And you take the naysayers when you go to a naysayer and they start giving you advice, you say, thank you so much for your advice. She needs the right exercise, 10 to 15 minutes twice a day for 12 to 14 weeks, and then she'll see where exercise plays a role. There are many people, they rehabilitate their knee. They don't need surgery. The MRI shows there's a torn meniscus. Their knee gets better, and they have no knee. I had a patient of mine, he has no knee pain, and he just hiked the Rockies. And in the old days, meaning like a year ago, before that, I would have sent him to get arthroscopy. Mm-hmm. And in the end, he didn't need it. He did it with exercise. Your daughter can improve her life. Help her.
Great. I'll call you in 3 months.
Thank you. We'll look forward to it.
Okay, thank you. All right.
Bye-bye. And thanks for this call. We appreciate it. At 800-462-7413. Before we take a break now, Zorba, let's pry open the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and tackle a listener email. This one came to us from Diane in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. She writes, "Hello, Dr. Zorba. I am a very long-time listener, and I often listen in my..."
Is that proper English, by the way? I am a very long-time listener. Will the grammar police get us for this
email? No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm a long-time listener is different
than a very, very long-time. I agree with that.
I'm a nurse and psychiatric nurse practitioner therapist, and often will use information for my patients and myself. I'm a healthy 60-year-old, and the one area I struggle with is having enough time for active exercise. I do yoga and Pilates, but was intrigued with your personal interval training app. If I can do more with less time, I am all in. What app do you use? Thank you for what you do, and I love the energy between you and what's-his-name. She didn't say that. She mentioned my name.
Oh, maybe she did. She just didn't read it on there. Well, I use one of the 7-minute apps, and I think they're all good. The one I use happens to be a Johnson & Johnson one, so they must have sponsored it because it says Johnson & Johnson on it. But the 7-minute apps are great because what they do is they get your body going and you go immediately from one thing to the other, and I find it very useful. So especially in the wintertime, I'll hit my elliptical for 20 minutes. I'll do this 7-minute app, and then I'll sit for 10 minutes in Zen meditation. And that's a workout that makes me feel really, really good.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our recipe is coming up next, a special listener recipe. Tom, that's another Tom, will be on the phone with us. And more of your calls, of course, too, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Recipe time now, Zorba. And this week, we're in for quite a treat. Today, we have a special listener guest joining in on the fun. Tom Bennett joins us now. He generously submitted his tasty asparagus recipe via email. Tom, welcome to the show.
Well, same to you.
Glad to have you here. Now, tell us about the recipe, how you came up with it, how often you have it, that kind of thing.
Well, my originality is somewhat limited, but and so I will admit to having stolen the recipe from one of my best friends, and where he stole it, I don't know. But we were invited, my wife and I, to supper at their place, and the lasagna was quite good, but the side dish, which they made with green beans, was really standout. So we asked for the recipe, and I promptly stole it.
Applied it. Stole it. How many years ago was that?
Oh, it's, I don't know, maybe a little over a year ago.
a little over a year ago.
Yeah, but you're not a thief because you use asparagus
instead
of the green beans.
That's right. You adapted. You adapted and improved his recipe. So
yes,
have you
much,
had
much better.
Have you had him over for dinner?
Oh, yes.
Yes, and what did he say?
He thought it seemed somewhat familiar.
You know what? Nothing gets past him. Nothing gets past him. So, well, what I like about this recipe is also its simplicity. I mean, sometimes I like to do complex recipes, but quite often, especially lately, I've been more, what is a simple way to prepare food and make it tasty? And I think this recipe really hits the spot. And I love asparagus. It's really my favorite vegetable. Tom, do you like asparagus? I'm talking to this Tom, not you. Tom Clark, do you like asparagus?
I love asparagus.
Oh, that's unusual. Where'd you get, how come you like that?
That's unusual.
That you like a vegetable. You never say you like a vegetable with such enthusiasm.
That's not true. I'm starting to eat lots of veggies.
And name another a vegetable you like as much as asparagus. Name it. Green beans.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Cauliflower.
Tomatoes.
Tomatoes,
see?
Sure.
Asparagus.
Yeah, we just talked about asparagus.
Yeah, well, see, asparagus gave you much more
Let's do the recipe.
All right, let's do this. Okay. Start out with a tablespoonful of butter, right? And then a tablespoonful of olive oil. So you mix them both together? Is that what you do? And 3 cups of fresh asparagus cut into 1-inch lengths.
Or so.
1-inch lengths or so. Okay, or so. So in other words, you don't use a ruler. You just kind of cut them into 1-inch length. You're not obsessive.
Right.
Tablespoon of minced garlic. Mm-hmm. 1/2 tablespoonful of salt. What kind of soy sauce do you use?
The kind that comes in a small bottle.
A small bottle. The nice-looking bottle? The Kekkonen's?
It looked fairly nice to me.
Yeah, it looks fairly nice to you. Well, I think...
Does it matter?
Yeah, it does matter. It makes a big difference. La Choy, which is sort of common and comes in a sort of an ugly bottle, is saltier. You know, there are different tastes of soy sauce, yes. Kekkonen's is probably the most popular soy sauce in America and has an iconic bottle. And it's made in Wisconsin, most importantly, Walworth, Wisconsin. They make Kekkonen's soy sauce. Really. You didn't know that.
Yeah. I think that either is or isn't the kind I use.
Either is or isn't. Thanks. Thanks for setting me straight with that. And 1 tablespoonful of honey. Oh, I like this. So if we make the recipe, we mix the honey and soy sauce together, set it aside, heat the butter and olive oil in a large frying pan at medium to high heat. Add the garlic and salt. Wait a couple minutes. Add the asparagus. This is really nice and simple for 8 minutes. And then add the soy sauce and honey. Doesn't it just taste good? Can't you picture this, Tom?
Oh, yeah.
It's wonderful. Yeah. For 1 minute and transfer to serving dish. I love it. I think I'm going to make this tonight. It's a wonderful, wonderful recipe. And it's great. Now, where do you get your asparagus? You get it from farmers markets when it's in season?
Oh, once in a while. We actually live in the country, and there is some growing along the fence line. Uh-huh. However, we planted some a few years ago, and most of it comes from our garden.
Oh, good. So how much asparagus do you get from your garden? I'm asking because I planted it years ago, and then I've got an asparagus story.
I sort of have a black thumb.
Mm-hmm. A black thumb. black thumb.
So we don't get a lot.
I think I have a black thumb, too. So when we first moved in our house, I spent a lot of time. I remember reading this book on gardening from PBS. I'm blocking on the name of the guy now. But, I mean, how to do it. I put the right amount of manure in the hole, everything else. And the asparagus plants came up beautifully, and I got a bunch of asparagus. But being the black thumb gardener that I was, I planted trees along the line with the asparagus. So eventually the trees took over, and I don't get any asparagus anymore, so I can relate to that.
I think I did the same thing.
Well, this is a wonderful recipe, wonderful, wonderful recipe. Thank you so much for sharing this, and I might adopt this to other veggies as well.
Sure.
It works great for zucchini and green beans, cucumbers, just about anything.
Oh, that sounds very nice. And especially during the wonderful season like we have right now, veggies are great. But even during the winter season when it's cold, it's wonderful to have veggies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and have a different way of doing veggies.
I want to thank you so much, Tom Bennett. Although you have quite a sense of humor, and we don't usually allow listener humor to overshadow the Zorba and Tom
humor.
You
got it.
I will keep it shorter next time.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again for the recipe. To get a copy, Zorba, what do they do?
You go to the web, you go to zorbapastor.org, and you will find that recipe and other wonderful recipes. That's zorbapastor.org.
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, with a listener in Belleville, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I like to chew on ice chips when I'm watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife said to me, oh, that's a sign that you're anemic.
Mm-hmm.
And
what else did she tell you besides that?
You know, so I, of course, go and I look it up on the internet, and I found something called, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, pica.
Pica.
Mm-hmm. Where people are known to eat dirt or paper or ice.
Right.
And, of course, I'm not interested in dirt or paper.
Why not? It tastes better. Think of the texture. Dirt in your mouth? I mean, it's got more texture than ice. Paper has that nice crunch to it as you're chewing it.
He picked the right one of those three, I think.
He picked ice. Instead of rock, paper, scissors, it's dirt, paper, ice. That's what it is. Dirt, paper, ice. I'm going to do it next time. Sorry, we'll get back to the call. We're having too much fun today. First of all, why do you chew ice? Is it like, do you start with the whole cube, or do you break it up before?
Oh, no, I have a hammer? Pressure coming out of the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I'll just fill up a cup and crush some ice and put some water in it and get a spoon and sit down while I'm watching TV and pick out the smaller ones and... Yeah. Chomp them down.
Well, first of all, the real issue is chewing on an ice cube is bad for your teeth because you're likely to crack a tooth, because that turns out you have to put a lot of pressure on a big ice cube, which you're not doing, to make it actually work. And that's an issue with dentists, and people lose their crowns, they lose their teeth when they have a cavity, so that's not good. But eating crushed ice is sort of just like eating Italian ice that's just a little bit chopped up. It's not a sign of anemia. Now, think about the advantages of eating ice. First of all, there are no calories, right?
Yep.
You better eat ice than to eat a snow cone, right? A snow cone has all that sugar in it and calories. Or ice cream. What if you sat in front of the, you know, in front of the TV and ate a pint or two of ice cream? You'd weigh more. So, but no, I think you're mentally sound for eating ice, and you're not anemic for eating ice. It's a non-caloric drink. And I think we should start having ice chip stores, and maybe this will be the next.
Hey, there you go.
See, the next big idea. But yeah, you're okay to eat ice as long as it's not a cube. Tell you, what does she have when she sits in front of the TV? Popcorn or something?
No, she's got a glass of ice water.
Of ice water. See, so she likes water,
but she doesn't chew on the ice.
She doesn't. Does she ever say, "Pass the ice, I want to try it"?
Nope.
Oh, well, maybe you should offer a glass and you can switch her over to pure ice.
I'll try that.
That was a long pause.
That was a long. Yeah. That was
had
a long
to give
pause.
That, some
that was a thoughtful. That was a thoughtful pause. Thank you. Thank you very much. You don't need your blood count checked. Thanks.
Okay. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. We appreciate that call at 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, a listener with us in Kimberling City, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, guys. I love your show. I love the silliness, but I really enjoy the information.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
How can we help? And guess
what? What?
This is my second time in a decade.
Oh, cool.
Oh, no. Sorry, you have to go away. We only allow one
per decade, right? You used to do that on your morning show.
I'm a loyal fan.
Tom had a morning show. He used to do that and say one call a week, right?
That's true.
That's true.
Some people were so obsessed.
So obsessed.
Called
or upset.
Every day or twice a day. Anyway, let's move along here.
All righty. Well, I have a question. I take several different health supplements, and I have questions about them being taken individually, but I also have questions about them being taken together. And the first one is what is the what I think is the colloidal silver. It's the liquid silver that talks about the positively charged silver that claims it to be safe. It can be used under my tongue, which I use for the allergies. And in the Missouri Ozarks, we have tremendous amount of allergies
in the
spring.
You're kind of known for that down there. The pollen counts are pollen counts are horrendous, that whole area
and
of the country.
And I'll tell you guys, this spring has been different with that silver under my tongue every day.
Oh, then do it. If it helps your anything that helps your allergies, do it. I don't know why it would work. On the other hand, we don't understand why some people respond more to allergies than others. I mean, we see the response, and we know it can be inherited, but we really don't understand it. So if colloidal silver works, I think it's innocuous, I would take it. That's certainly something I would take. You also have some other supplements you take?
Yes, but I'll tell you, Dr. Zorba, though, I'm worried about the reviews of the silver that you read on the internet. Like, almost danger, danger.
Well, I, you know, once again, one of the things you have to ask is this worthwhile to me? Now, let's look at the pollen counts and stuff. Have you tried, did you ever try nasal sprays such as Flonase that are steroid nasal sprays that you can use for allergies?
I have before, but I didn't need them this spring.
But, I mean, those we know are proven and safe. Okay, so that's a good example if you want to go to proven and safe. Antihistamines have been around for 50 years, 60 years, maybe even 70 years. We know they're proven safe. We don't know anything proven with supplements because they're not regulated by the FDA. They're regulated like cosmetics. So they're regulated the same way lipstick and powder and, you know, and cosmetics are regulated. So you can't depend upon the safety of any supplement you take. So if you're ever looking for safety information on a supplement, I recommend people either go to Consumer Reports, get information there. You can go to your local library and get it. Look it up. Or ConsumerLab.com. I love them. ConsumerLab.com. I don't own stock of the company. You have to pay to use the website because there's no advertising, just like Consumer Reports. And they will give you the skinny on pretty much, almost, I wouldn't say every supplement, but a lot of supplements. That is material that you can trust because it's scientifically based. And if you're ever worried or concerned about whether or not a supplement is safe, you want to go to a good site. And Consumer Reports and Consumer Labs are good sites.
That's great. I will do that as soon as I hang up. Now, the other things I take, health supplements, and as well as some other things like some magnesium and zinc and calcium and whatnot. But for hot flashes, and it's a brand name, but it is number one ingredient is ammonium succinate with amino acids, minerals, and vitamin E. And something called calcium disucinate. Now, does that scare you, any of that?
Well, I don't know much about it. You know, supplements for hot flashes are, hot flashes can be very difficult for people. Black cohosh is something that's been useful in the past for supplements, but I don't know anything about this particular supplement. And once again, the regulation on these is very, it's with a very light hand. So the label may say it has something in it, and it may not have any of it in it. They don't have to guarantee if it has ammonium succinate or succinate. They don't even have to put any of it in, and they can get away with it. And that's they do not have to go by good pharmaceutical practices. So once again, if it's not been reviewed, I don't recommend it.
Okay.
That's my spin. I've been very disappointed with supplements. I know it's a $7 billion a year industry, but I'm small fries, so they never send me mean and nasty things. They're not like the grammar police. There are no supplement police who come by. So good luck.
All right. I thank you so much, Dr. Zorba. And Carl, you too. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Appreciate
Thanks for
call.
Listening. See, Carl got a supplement, got a compliment too. It wasn't just you this time.
That's the truth. Before the break, Zorba, let's check in with guess who?
The Grammar Police.
The following email came to us from a listener named Khan. He writes, "Hey, Doc, the word medicine means the substance one takes to improve or ameliorate a medical condition. The word medication means the schedule on which a medicine is taken. One cannot take a medication, especially if it is on paper. If this one is done, one may need a medicine on a medication schedule."
Well, I'll tell you something. I would heartily disagree with this particular grammar policeman, because we in the industry use the word, "Have you taken your medications and have you taken your medicines the same way?" This is clearly somebody who reads Webster's Dictionary and not someone who works in a nursing home or in a hospital. So I would disagree with this particular grammar cop. But you know what? Sometimes grammar cops are wrong, just like sometimes when I get a speeding ticket, I'm not really a speeding officer.
Want to give Zorba a taste of his own medicine? Enlist in the Grammar Police by posting on our Facebook page or sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some really interesting research that's coming up next. More of your calls, too, of course, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. From PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is that number. But before our next call, Zorba, coffee.
I know. We talked about coffee, and we talk about coffee. You would think I was obsessed with coffee.
But this is some really, really, really important research.
That's right. And I am obsessed with coffee, by the way.
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
So the strength of these new studies that show that coffee promotes longevity, that's the interesting thing. The strength is that there are two studies published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. The first study is a huge study of 500,000 people. It's a longevity study, 10 countries in Europe, so mostly Caucasians, 10 countries in Europe that have been followed for a whole bunch of things. They look at diet and exercise and smoking and everything else. The second study was out of the University of Southern California that looked at 180,000 people, and these people that they were following were mostly people that were minorities. They looked at African Americans, Koreans, Asians, Hawaiians, and so on. Mm-hmm. So both of these studies, researchers looked into the data that looked at coffee consumption and overall mortality. In other words, do you drink coffee? Are you living longer? That kind of stuff. And what they found was people who drink 3 to 4 cups of coffee a day, whether it's decaf or regular coffee, appear to have less cancer of the digestive tract, fewer heart attacks, and fewer strokes.
Wow.
That's 3 to 4 cups a day, of whether or not it's caffeinated or not. Now, that's very interesting. So first of all, what's a cup? A cup is 6 to 8 ounces. Mm-hmm. Americans usually in the morning have a mug. They don't have a cup. So they basically, when you get up in the morning and you have a mug of coffee, that's 2 cups. You know,
okay.
You've had half.
Okay.
And then if you have another cup at lunch, you're at the sweet spot, which is 3 cups. Now, the question is, what's going on? Well, one theory says it may be the polyphenols, the antioxidants that are actually in coffee, because it's not the caffeine, because decaf counts too. That may be what it is. But it may be a marker that people who drink coffee do more. Maybe they think more, maybe they get up more, maybe they exercise more. Nobody knows exactly what it is. But the downriver part of the study that's interesting is a lot of people think coffee is bad for you. And the answer is it is not bad for you. I think there are enough studies that show coffee decreases the risk of diabetes and other things that it's actually an elixir of life.
A personal question. Does instant work?
I think instant works as well as anything. They really didn't differentiate. Yeah, obviously. Obviously, we have somebody here who's not a coffee nerd. It's not somebody who cares about the taste of the coffee he drinks because he's excited. Yes, whether it's instant, whether it's brewed, whether it's dripped, whether it's perked, it doesn't matter. 3 to 4 cups a day has a salutatory effect and will keep you alive longer.
800-462-7413 is our number. What's that, Zorba?
Yes, I've got a postcard, Tom. The front of the postcard says, "Kapow, you are awesome." Now, who wouldn't turn over a postcard like this? By the way, my little granddaughter, Bella, who I took on a walk the other day, when she saw a helium balloon, she looked at the balloon and she said, "Oh, wow, oh, wow, oh, wow." She said 3 oh, wows.
Oh, okay.
She thinks that's the name of a balloon. Every time she says a balloon, she goes, "Oh, wow, oh, wow, oh, wow." I think she thinks that's a balloon name. But on the other side of this card, it's very, very nice card. I love cards. They're wonderful. And it says, "Hi, Zorba. Just read your column on life can be as sweet as you make it. Thank you for that, and thanks for being here." Wasn't that sweet?
Nice. Yeah,
that was from Sarah B. I'm going to take this particular card and use it at home when I need points with my wife.
Can I plug your column?
Yeah.
If you, dear listener, would like it, say something to the newspaper and then, that here's a really, really good column from a really, really smart doctor.
Thank you.
And
we're on in a number of states. I love doing it. The column is punchy. It's exciting. It's highly opinionated. It's not the usual medical columns, which are boring. In most medical columns, I fall asleep. Dr. Gott, you know, he would write about warts, and in the middle of the column, I would find myself snoozing. My column is not like that, so.
1-800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Fitchburg, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
I've got a question about what I think is an allergy or sinus issue. Infrequently, I go south during the wintertime, specifically Jamaica, Cozumel, southern Florida. Invariably, after about the second or third day, I get what seems like a really bad head cold. But this last time, I did pick up a decongestant at the resort little store, and it helped a lot. So I'm convinced it's not a head cold.
Right. It may be, you may have some eustachian tube dysfunction from the airplane. And let me explain what that is. If you take your nose right now, close it and pop your ears. Go ahead. Do that. Do that for me.
Yeah.
That's your eustachian tube. It's a ventilation tube between sort of the back of the nose and your ears to make sure that your middle ear is at the same barometric pressure as your nose. And when you go in an airplane, everything changes all over the place. And what happens is that tube collapses. And when it collapses, it sucks in the eardrum. And then you go, "What did you say? I can't hear you." You know. And so if you want to, you know, pop your ears in the airplane, you blow your nose and open that tube. And that is a common tube that collapses in airplanes, and Sudafed happens to be a very good treatment for it. And a lot of people take Sudafed before they get on a flight, and it helps them fly. That's what they do. So you probably don't have a cold. You probably have this tube dysfunction and should take Sudafed. Do you have allergies at all?
As a young person, I had what I would call seasonal fall allergies.
Uh-huh.
However, as I've gotten older, they're they're a lot better. They're not nearly as bad as they had been.
Yeah, you know, son, that's one of the great things about getting older is you don't have the same allergies. But the reason is because your immune system is beginning to fail, and you're much more likely to get pneumonia. So you're more likely to get sick with pneumonia, but you don't suffer from seasonal allergies.
What's the other good thing about getting older?
The other good thing, yeah. That's the other good thing about getting old. That's exactly it. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate that. So I hope that helps. Does this happen every time you go on an airplane?
Not every time I go on an airplane. I only notice it when I go south. We just took a trip, and we ended up in Norway and Russia. Mm-hmm. I had no issues at all.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's interesting.
But when I go south during the winter, I seem to have this issue.
Yeah. Well, I would.
And like I say, it doesn't show up for 2 or 3 days after I land.
Yeah. I would still think it's probably eustachian tube dysfunction. What I would do is when you get the symptoms, then you take the Sudafed. I don't think it would be. I would take it preventively. I would not do that. So clearly, okay. It's partially due to season. So well, keep traveling and take your Sudafed.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. Thanks a lot. Time now, Zorba, for our
wait a second. What's the other good thing about getting old? I don't know. I don't have the answer.
You didn't
to it.
Answer me.
No, we have to ask our listeners, what's the other good thing about getting old? Maybe we'll get a response on our Facebook page, or if they send an email to zorba@wpr.org, then we might get a response to what's the other good thing about being
old. How old do you have to be to respond?
Well, how old do you have to be old?
That's also another question.
I mean, old age is 25 years older than you are today, so for you, it's 105.
Let's do our medical myth buster. Today's question is from a listener named Tom.
That is pretty old.
This listener is Tom.
God, what are
we got
the
more Toms than
we got all these
Toms
today.
Pills.
We got the Tom recipe. We got the Tom listener. We have Tom Clark.
Hello,
I
Doc.
Think we should just call it the Tom Show.
Hello, Dr. Pastor.
The Tom Show. That's what this is.
I have, not me, this listener, has low back pain that's probably typical of a 58-year-old man like me. I've been going to physical therapy and taking prescription medications, and I'm also doing some stretches I found online. It's helped a little, but I'm wondering if one of those zero-gravity chairs would be worth the money. Do you know of any clinical research on the efficacy of those chairs in relieving pain and improving health? They run up to $3,500, and
I wouldn't
mind spending the money if I thought they really help.
I don't think there's any evidence that they really help. They may help symptomatically. A lot of, you know, people use them and they feel better and their back feels better and they feel more comfortable in zero gravity chairs. But I would feel more comfortable if I had $3,500 in my back pocket than have a zero gravity chair. Frankly, that would make me feel better. But I don't think there's any evidence, scientific evidence, they actually work. Otherwise, you'd go to physical therapy and they'd be putting you in the zero gravity chairs. Now, if you're going to buy one, I wouldn't spend $3,500. I would go to Craigslist. My guess is, or eBay, there are a lot of zero gravity chairs out there for half the price or a quarter of the price. This is where used equipment, you know, is going to have a big markdown. But the other thing is you might try it and see whether or not it helps you. But the problem is you go into like a place to buy one and you're going to go, oh, that feels pretty good. And the salesperson is going to say, don't you feel better? Mm. Don't you feel good? You're walking straighter. Can't you figure it? Look at your posture. Give me your money. I mean, that would be the mantra.
Have a potential myth for Zorba. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@wpr.org.
Now, Zorba, before we head out, let's tackle another listener email. This one came to us from a listener named Mary. She writes, hi, Zorba. I've been hearing a lot lately about lymph gland manual drainage. I thought it sounded hokey until my daughter, who's recovering from ovarian cancer, had some lessons from a nurse on how to do this, and she said she felt better after doing it. What can you tell us about this?
Well, what happens is lymph glands are responsible for about 3% of the circulatory system, and After you have surgery, breast cancer surgery and other surgeries, lymph glands are taken out of the body, often as part of the surgical procedure to make sure that there's no cancer in it, to check it and make sure that isn't the case. And with that, often can come swelling. And there are lots of other things that can produce swelling of the lymphatic system. The massage is trying to get that lymph, get the liquid that's in the lymph system and to try to get it back to the heart so the swelling decreases. It's often done by physical therapists who are specially trained in it. For some people, it can be very effective. Sometimes they actually have to go to the therapist to get it done, and then over time it gets better. And I relate to this because my father had this. My father had melanoma of the leg, and he had a whole bunch of lymph nodes that were removed. And then his leg swelled up after the lymph nodes were removed, which saved him. Melanoma did not spread. And so for about 6 weeks, he had a machine that he had to wear at night that was really noisy and would push the lymph back into the central part of his body. It would like compress him and not compress him. And it was very difficult because it would wake you up. It was very, very noisy. But once the lymph got back inside the body, essentially, he was able to wear an elastic stocking. And for the next 30 years, he rarely had a problem. So the massage was done mechanically at that time with a system called Jobst. The manual massage is different and is often used immediately after surgery or some period of time and can be just as effective as the machine.
If you need one of those machines, are they any better now than they were when you...
Oh, I don't really have any idea. I know the manual massage works. I know people do it and they're trained in it. I don't know if the new machines are any better. But if you have swelling post-surgery from your lymphatic system, you should look either into a machine manufactured by Jobst, J-O-B-S-T, your doctor or physical therapist can tell you, or get lymphatic massage.
Have a question for Zorba? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org or, of course, Facebook.
And don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0722Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.